5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you once again. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin on the other side of the glass. Happy Sunday, Angel.
Happy Sunday, 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 Sunday. Croc Podcast is on the air. I'm excited.
We are on a very exciting module here about kindness in cancer care. I believe this is episode number 726. at least it seems that way. I'm happy to say we're coming to a close, but all kidding aside, Croc Nation, what a beautiful, helpful paper and module this has been. And why do we do this, Angel? We do this so when a cancer survivor goes and looks at a certain module and it says kindness and cancer care, they go in, they peek, they're a little interested, they listen to the 6 or 7 episodes. And by the end of those episodes, they're going to be basically knowing what they should be getting. Now, if they're getting what we're telling them they should be getting, then all is good with the world. But if they're not, heads will roll. They're going to say to their practitioners, excuse me, Dr. Smith, why are we not getting any deep listening? No empathy, no generosity, no timely care, no gentle honesty. And today's episode, no one cares a rat's ass about our caregivers. So today we're going to be talking about caregiver care. To put it mildly, we are failing miserably, not just in the way we take care of cancer patients or not show kindness to cancer patients, but we're ignoring completely the people that are most important to them. And I'd like to start this podcast with a story. It's a very personal story, but I'd like to share it with my several thousand Croc Nation buddies about what happened to me when I was young. So as a young boy, I had my challenges, as we've already discussed, in a single parent model. And I was very close to my grandparents on my mother's side and spent a heck of a lot of time with them. When I was 7 years old in 1967, my mother got a call that she had to take a plane, a night plane, and in those days, a night flight was something crazy. In the middle of the winter of 1967, I was in second grade. She pulled me out of second grade. We get on an airplane and we go down to Florida because my grandmother is starting to act very strange. And we go down, we evaluate her, we take her to the doctors, and we bring her up here, we take her to the doctors. And it turns out that she gets diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Now, Parkinson's disease, like cancer, can be a very chronic and insidious type of disease, and could really take its toll. And from 1967 until 1981, my mother took care of both my grandmother and my grandfather. So she was their caregiver. Now, I have to put it in perspective. A Parkinsonian is someone who's neurologically very traumatized, compromised. And my little grandmother, who must have weighed 110 pounds or whatever, 120 pounds, got to the point where my mother had to basically carry her everywhere. And 120 pounds doesn't sound like a lot, but 120 pounds of dead weight is a lot. So my life, literally, and I said this from the night it happened, and it turned out to be eerily true. My mother said she didn't feel well. And I said, well, and you have to understand, that was my lifeline, right? In 1981, I was a junior in college and she was my lifeline. And she said, I'm just not feeling good. So the next day we took her to the hospital, and lo and behold, all of those years of taking care of her parents and all the physical labor, she ended up with a severe heart attack. And from that moment on, my life changed entirely. My grandmother had to go into a state nursing home. My mother became very decrepit, and I had to take care of her. So the dominoes that fell because of the fact that my mother was the primary caregiver of my grandmother really, really shows how important it is for us to pay attention to those caregivers. And again, God bless my wife. She's always correcting me. Just want to make sure we clarify the nomenclature. So caregiver is someone who gives care. It could be your doctor. It could be your nurse. It could be your physical therapist. It could be your speech therapist. It could be your speech and swallowing. It could be your lymphedema lady or man. It could be any of those people, your nutritionist. A caretaker is somebody who takes care of your lawn, someone who paints your house, someone that is the superintendent of your building. Those are caretakers. They're not caregivers. So just so I'm clear, we'll talk about that. So Angel, today we're going to talk about these very special people. They're these caregivers. And you know, you may not know this either, but I know Croc Nation knows how much effort I put into these podcasts. And I'm always looking for a secondary source because, you know, we're going off of Raina and Len Barry's paper about kindness and cancer care. And I always want a second source. So lo and behold, I go on my search and I find this amazing article called Supporting the Supporters, What Family Caregivers Need to Care for a Loved One with Cancer. Guess who wrote it?
Let me see. Len Barry.
So I can't get away from this guy. He's like stalking me. He's everywhere. Not only does this guy, you know, write the primary paper, he even writes my follow-up paper. So I want to give kudos to Len and his co-authors. I'm going to really kill this name, and I apologize. Shraddha Delwadi and Joseph Jacobson. So those are the those were his co-authors. This is published in Care Delivery Review, and it was published in 2016. So thank you, Len, once again, for not only all of your work and how it affects humanity, but how it affects our cancer survivors through this podcast. So we're going to talk a little bit about that paper. We're going to do a deep dive. And then what we'll do next week, Angel, on our 728th show on kindness and cancer care, we're going to complete it by putting it all together. So we'll put all six of the six strategies for kindness into perspective for those of you who want the Cliff Note version of this module. So I did want to shout out to Len, and I'm happy that I did that. So pretty much what we're looking at, as we already mentioned from my personal experience, there's a huge problem. Our caregivers are ill-prepared. They have low self-esteem. They don't know what the heck they're doing. And worst of all, we make them feel that way and we create them. And little do we know, Angel, and I actually do know this, they are one of the greatest resources for a cancer patient's care that we have available. Our drugs are great. Our chemotherapy are great. Our targeted agents are great. Our systemic agents are great. Our immunotherapy is great. Our radiation rays are great. Our laparoscopic robotic surgeons and razors and lasers and gases and mixes, they're all great. Our isotopes are great. But at the end of the day, those caregivers are as important a resource, not just for the comfort of our patients, but also for their outcomes. So let's talk a little bit about the abstract. So patients with cancer who live at home often require help with activities of daily living. Basic medical care like injections, taking their medications, social needs, and advocacy. Most of that support comes from intimate caregivers, typically members of the patient's family. These family caregivers themselves require support so they can be effective and maintain their own well-being while caring for the patient with cancer. Research shows that support for caregivers contributes to achieving these goals. And what Len does with his co-authors is he goes through four aspects, which we're going to go through, of how we can help our caregivers. One is to assess our caregivers. Number two is to educate our caregivers. Number three is to empower our caregivers. And number four is to assist our caregivers proactively. And we're going to look at a couple of keywords: bidirectional health, proactive versus reactive, innovation, inclusionary, anticipation, and accessibility. So we're going to be talking about all of these things, and we're going to tie it up into a nice pink with a pink bow within 30 minutes. So I'm going to go through a quote quickly to kind of put this in perspective. The desperate race for cancer cures. I hope that all doctors, politicians, and scientists will remember to look at the dark side of that moon where the caregivers live and find a way to ease their journey. Isn't that beautiful?
Very well said. And I like the whole, I just like the way we're going with this. It's very strategic. And yeah, keep going.
So an estimated 4.6 million people in the United States care for someone with cancer at home. Too often, these caregivers, their spouses, other family members, or friends are poorly prepared for this vital but demanding role that takes a toll on them, like it did my mother, and by extension, the patient also. Only one third of all caregivers report being asked by a healthcare provider what they need to care for the patient. Even fewer are asked what they need to care for themselves. So huge problems here, Angel, huge.
Totally agree. I think that, you know, one of the things that we, what I love about our show is how we are constantly not having, not feeling that we're shackled to say that the system is broken. We've said that many times. And I think here's another great example. And I wanted to say this earlier, it's not an accident that we're finding ourselves back into Len Berry and his colleagues. There's a reason for it.
Yeah. And I think what Len does, and you know, I guess we've taken up on his cue, is in a very gentlemanly way, a very elegant and dignified way. He doesn't berate anybody. He doesn't put anyone down. He doesn't stamp his feet and have a temper tantrum. But he very softly, very gently, very intelligently points out the shortcomings. And as I said, again, we take this from Len as our guide. He doesn't just point out problems. He offers solutions to these problems. So Len, we'll send this off to you. I hope you listen to it because you really have made such an impact in your career. And we certainly tip our hats to you. At any given time, the family caregiver provides at least four types of assistance. So let's break them down, Angel. There's the daily living activities, preparing meals, giving medications, transportation, direct medical care, like wound care, injections, social support, companionship, encouragement, communication, spirituality, and advocacy. Going into the doctor's office, and how many times have I seen patients who don't have a clue as to what's going on, but they come in with their caregiver who knows what's going on, is able to advocate for the patient. And I think that that's a really beautiful way of breaking everything down. You have to look at even some of the more concrete and rote things, just the things we take for granted, helping a patient walk, to bathe, toileting, self-feeding, as the cancer gets worse, as patients become terminal and the hope of disease remission starts to fade, that's when these caregivers really have to step up their game. And it takes a heck of a lot out of them. A family caregiver's work can be a full-time occupation, an average of about 8.3 hours per day for 13.7 months, according to a study, in 66 hours per week during the patient's last year of life. 66 hours a week is a lot. That's a lot of hours. I'm tired just saying it. It's also a high-risk occupation, being a caregiver. The effects on the caregiver have been linked to diminished quality of life, depression, impaired immunity, heart disease, like my mother literally had her heart explode on her, and early death. Many family caregivers also have to quit a paying job or take a leave of absence, which worsens their financial situation, and they have a complete disruption of their lifestyle. Here's a beautiful little quote from the paper. Jonathan now has a quality of life that only can be described as poor, and so truthfully is mine. The fact that he is incapable of leaving the house and enjoying a movie or a walk in the park means that I no longer can do these things either. Like other well spouse caregivers, I am a victim too of his illness. Very, very powerful, right,
wow.
Angel?
Wow. So not even self-soothing. That's just so right, concrete, right to the point. I mean, you can't get any more blunt than that.
And I wanted to clarify something I said in the beginning of the podcast. Caregiver assistance, the caregiver and the patient are almost, locked in a death grip, and they call it a bi-directional health effect. So as one of the partners is, crimping out, so is the other one. The health of one affects the health of the other, just as in my grandmother's deteriorating situation also caused my mother's health, to take a dip and almost cause her death, as a matter of fact. We're going to talk a little bit about some evidence, like what, is it possible that what you're saying is if you help the caregiver, you'll actually get a better outcome for your patient? And the answer to that question is simply yes. Meta-analyses of caregiver interventions reveal positive outcomes for family caregivers and patients alike. As one of the articles writes, when a patient-caregiver dyad, which is the relationship between the two, is treated as the unit of care, as them being part and parcel of the same unit, important synergies are achieved that contribute to the well-being of both the patients and their caregivers. Education, skills training, and therapeutic counseling for caregivers favorably affect how they perceive their burden, quality of life, coping skills, and knowledge, while lowering their levels of depression, distress, and medical comorbidity. By the same token, patients who are effectively supported by a caregiver are less symptomatic and experience better physical and mental health than the control panel. Most cancer centers and clinics, I'm going to say this twice, most cancer centers and clinics do not offer comprehensive caregiver support programs, despite clear evidence of benefit. And I was going to ask you, what do you believe the number one reason is that there are not these programs?
Money. Why does that happen? I don't know if you're going to, maybe I'm getting ahead of you, but why does it seem, and this could be an all different podcast, why does it feel as if areas have no funding or lack thereof? Why do you think that is?
So, to my knowledge, being able to feed a multitude of people with seven fish and a couple of pieces of bread was only done once, and that was done by our Lord Jesus Christ. In order to try to make these programs happen, you need money, and there is no money. Nobody has money. There's money that goes into research. There's money that goes into different things. The last poor bastard child, orphan child, is the caregiver because they're the last priority. But what you said is exactly right. There really shouldn't be the last priority. And I take my hat off to you. I take my backward hat that you have on right now.
Let me tell you, this topic got me in my game mode. I for those of you not watching, I flipped my hat into a rally, almost like the rally version, because I'm like, you get a little bit perturbed by it, but because listen, when you're saying that, the first reaction I get, I'm sure people say, yeah, but everybody makes so much money, how much it is for an office visit, and we can debate this till the cows come home, but it's
I can tell you that we really have to reprioritize and rebudget to make this happen. So let's go through a framework, Angel, of the categories. There's two categories of these types of caregivers. One is actually advanced metastatic cancer. And we've actually been doing a lot of palliative care lately. That is unlikely to be cured, but requires chronic management for months to years. So patients with heart failure, lung disease, cancer patients. These are the long-term patients that are not going to get any better. And they have periods of stability interspersed with high stress, high need spikes, ultimately accumulating in irreversible decline. The second group is the really hot burning intensive curative therapy where you get highly intensive therapy. The patients get sick as hell, but they get better. But the physical and emotional toll in that model can be overwhelming for families. They give examples of families that are receiving their patients are getting induction chemotherapy for acute leukemia, people that are getting head and neck cancer treatments, so radiation and chemotherapy. These people get very, very, very sick and they can't do anything. And they literally have to have people, you know, blenderize their food, feed them in their feeding tubes, get them walking around, keep them, from losing tremendous amounts of weight, keep them hydrated, keep their nutritional status up, take care of their pain medication, get them for their daily treatments. I mean, this is not easy stuff we're talking about. So back to Len, thank you, Len. You don't just point out the problems, you give us solutions. Let's look at his four interventions. So we'll talk with assessment. So Angel, patient comes to me, breast cancer, lung cancer, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, whatever. The first thing I do, I don't just throw them on the table and shoot a radiation beam at them. I do what's called a comprehensive assessment or a history and physical. That takes a couple of hours to do. There's record reviews, film reviews, interviews, physical examinations. Wow. And there's all the documentation associated with it. The nurses are involved. The navigators are involved. And, it takes forever. And then we have a written record of that interaction. Well, why shouldn't the healthcare team, the caregivers, have a similar assessment? And what Len does, or what he recommends, is that there's a visual rendering showing the comprehensive sort of tree, like almost like a family tree, like ancestry.com. And when we post this article, you can see on page 37, there's a cancer care team for patient Lee Smith. So Lee's husband's name is Ron Smith, and he's the primary caregiver. Then the secondary caregiver is his daughter, Alice. And then another secondary caregiver is sister Deborah. And another secondary caregiver is home health nurse James. And then you have the direct treatment team, which is the patient care navigator, like Jane and Sarah, the social worker, the medical oncologist, the psychologist, the radiation oncologist, the finance insurance person, the scheduling person, the nutritionist, the occupational surgeon, the occupational therapist, the surgeon, the primary care doctor, the pharmacy, the off hours, people that take care of it. And they put everything into this sort of ancestry.com tree. So everyone knows what their role is.
Okay. I'm trying to follow.
I do want to say, and remember what I said in the beginning of the podcast, caregivers can be the greatest resource for a patient. So I saw a patient this week on a Monday, and he's being treated for a brain tumor. And I had seen him on his first day. And then he goes through the system where he goes for his simulation and starts his treatments. And he's seeing the therapists every day and the nurses and nurse practitioners. And I hadn't seen him in a while. And he asked to see me, and I came in to see him. And I said, "Hey, James, how are you today?" And he goes, "I just wanted to get clarity as far as, my treatment plan and what's going on. I haven't seen you for a while," whatever. I said, "James, let me ask you a question." I asked him what his understanding of everything is, and he had a pretty good understanding of everything from what we discussed on the first day, but it wasn't perfect. So I said, "Here's what we're going to do. Who takes care of you along with yourself? Do you have, a wife?" And he didn't have a wife, but he had a mom, and he had two sisters. And I said to the nurse, "Please set up a family conference so we could sit down." And I spent an hour with the entire family, I think 2 days later, and I went through his diagnosis, the type of cancer he had, the type of surgery he had, the treatment plan. We went through all of his films. We looked at his radiation films and his radiation plan. I told them the pluses, the minuses, the side effects, the prognosis, the expectancy, what to expect or whatever. And this was because I knew that if I spent this hour with James, it would be good, but it wouldn't be great. But when I sat down with James and his entire family, what was good became something great. And when they left that day, they knew about as much about what was going on with James as I did. And that was huge.
And what's great about that too, is that there's nothing lost in translation, because, you know, you got everybody on the same page. So the hardest part, and from my own experience, you come home and you try to regurgitate all that you've heard, but you're also taking it in, and it's so personal and it's so heart-wrenching and it could be overwhelming that by the time you get home, you either can forget, or you just say the wrong thing, or forget to mention the most important things.
Exactly. And I can't help tell you how many times in my career, uncountable amount of times that happened. Now there is one problem, and I'm here, telling everybody, preaching from my big, what do they say? Get off your soapbox. There are times when the agendas of the caregivers are not pure and they're not holy. And we have to be careful, because there are times when people have terrible relationships with their family members, and then the family members get cancer. And then all of a sudden, all that bad blood, and believe me, I come from an Italian family, and I don't think there was a time in my life that I ever saw all four of my uncles ever speaking at the same time. You know, one would be mad at the other. The other would be mad at the other. They would speak to the other one through the other one. They're just terrible, immature displays of, just petty bullshit. And, that happens. Our human journey is not perfect, and we are human, and we have some of these, petty feelings. And just because a patient gets diagnosed with cancer, whether it's curable or incurable, it doesn't change that dynamic. And now all of a sudden we're in the picture. We're not, privy to 40 years of family history, 50 years of family history, 60 years of family history. I've seen a ton of patients come in with their ex-spouses because they have no one else. I've seen a ton of patients come in with estranged, family members, children or whatever, that they hadn't seen in years. I have seen tremendous amounts of discord, between family members. So this might be an answer to your original question as to why, it's maybe the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Mm. Maybe the fact that it's not always perfect. Like, we love to think that, the patient comes in with his loving spouse of 60 years and his, devoted children. And, maybe that doesn't happen that much. Maybe that's the minority instead of the majority. And that could definitely cause a problem. But never forget what I always say, what Angel always says, is that the truth will set you free. Don't be fearful of having a direct conversation and saying, hey, I want to involve you in your husband and your ex-husband and your ex-wife and your sister and your brother and your father and your mother in your child's care. But tell me how your relationship is. How are you? Tell me about the last 5 years. Were there ever any moments where you guys weren't talking to each other? I've had patients have taken their children's children away, drugs, alcohol. I mean, we are in the Hudson Valley in a very rural, poverty stricken area where there's health disparities. If there's a bad story out there, we've seen it, right? And, that could be part of the process of assessing, the caregiver. So, this is not all Ridgewood, New Jersey. Some of it is in, real America with real problems and real social issues. So make sure you dig. But that entire, DNA ancestry.com, I think that's a really good idea. I like that. So that's assessment. They also have assessment tools, and they have what they call scales, validated scales. So there's a caregiver reaction assessment, the cancer caregiving task consequences and needs questionnaire. And you have to go deep. I mean, you have to talk about their availability, their abilities. I know my wife, she won't give anybody medication. She just is not a medication person. She's not going to be helpful if someone needs medication, right? You have to also look at employment status, responsibilities to the family, community activities, competency, how educated they are, what their experience is, what their medical skills, what their mental stability is, what their family dynamics, as I said, with that little tangent that I went on, the strength of the relationship of the patient with their families, their financial situations, and their willingness to give care. And don't think for a second that there's not some secondary agendas when it comes to trying to get something. You know, if they see that their family member is like checking out, all of a sudden that kid who never spoke to their parents all of a sudden is like, you know, really cozying up to them. You know what I mean? You know, bellying up to the bar and being like, you know, really good Johnny, you know, little Johnny boy, you know, the awesome son, you know, whereas, you know, they might be just interested in what Johnny boy is going to get the house or the jewelry or this or that, you know, make no mistake. Part two, education. So I'd like to think, Angel, that the modules that you, myself, and Rod are putting together, these teaching modules, are exactly what we're talking about. So this kindness and cancer care and the sub episode on the caregiver, this would be something for caregivers to listen to. So if in our Croc Nation, there's a patient listening to this, and they might want to say to their wife, their husband, their children, whoever their caregivers are, hey, you need to listen to, you know, Santana and Ian Ellie's podcast on caregivers. This is directly for you. You know, so I think that we are in the business of this education, but also skill training, having centers like some of the bigger centers, the tertiary care centers, have caregiver curriculums. On how to take care of symptoms, how to manage symptoms, nutrition, stress management, communication. You know, you could do this face to face. You could do it on a video conference. You could do it on YouTube. You can do it on, in a group. There's so many different ways of doing it. At Dana-Farber, they're doing a pilot program where they're teaching family members and caregivers how to manage their children's venous catheters so they don't have to be hospitalized. MD Anderson has educational videos. The Croc podcast has educational modules. Different things, different groups have different things. And you have to make sure that, you know, that these patients know where their resources are. The next one, number three, is empowerment. And it's really not empowerment as much. I view it more as inclusionary. So the way you empower a caregiver is make them feel part of that unit. Remember, we said there's the dyad, there's the patient, the caregiver, and we want to make them feel part of one unit. But the way we do it is not just with talk, it's by respecting them, by listening to what they have to say, by taking what they have to say seriously. There was a very interesting little vignette here from a woman whose husband had bladder cancer. And, you know, she would say to the nurses, give Joey some saline with that. And they would say, no, the saline's not necessary. And they would say, yeah, it's not necessary, but it makes him feel better. So give him the fucking saline, right? So, you know, that's basically someone has to stand up for the patient. They have to feel empowered. You don't want to have them yell at the nurses to do what they say. You want the nurses to say, okay, Mrs. Jones, is that what, you know, we respect you as a person. We respect you as a caregiver. We got this, you know, we will absolutely do, if it makes, you know, Mr. Jones feel better, we're going to give him that saline. So that's how we can empower them, by respecting them and making them feel, you know, important. And that gives them self-confidence and that gives them self-assurance. Assistance is the fourth. And assistance, I don't really put as assistance, the way I put it as anticipation and accessibility. So 99.999% of my patients that we deal with in an emergency situation, we are reactive to. Now, reactive means you get that 11th hour phone call. Hey, Mr. Jones has a fever 103. What do we do? It's a Saturday. Mr. Jones, he ran out of pain medication. He's got no pain medication and his pain is a 10 out of 10. Or, hey, Mr. Jones can't pee. What do we do? And this is reactionary. We don't want that. We want to assist the caregivers by anticipating these problems and being accessible to them, but also to be proactive. So if I have a guy I saw today who was starting to have, we're treating his brain, but soon we're going to start taking care of his bone areas. He mentioned some pain in the left hip. We're going to start that next week. He mentioned some pain in his back. We're going to start that next week. He also mentioned today some pain in his right femur, in his right leg bone. I looked at the films and lo and behold, he had a lesion in the femur. So instead of waiting for him to fracture that femur and then say, come to the hospital and we're going to repair, put a rod in there, I called the patient. I said, okay, Mrs. Jones, I looked at the films. I see the problem. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to have Mr. Jones not bear any weight on that femur all weekend. He's going to have his cane or his crutches or his walker, and we're going to make sure he does not fracture that bone because that bone is at risk for a fracture. On Monday, we're going to get some x-rays to make sure that the cortex or the integrity of that bone is sufficient to not allow for what's called a pathological fracture, and then we're going to expedite treatment to that area. Another patient I talked to today, we'll call him Joe. Joe called me on a Thursday and said, I'm giving you plenty of notice as you made me promise that I have 4 days of pain meds left and the weekend is coming. So instead of getting a call in the weekend, not being available, not being able to prescribe his pain meds, especially someone who needs around the clock pain medication, his pain medications were called in on a Thursday. So we prevented that issue from happening. We want to avoid these sort of reactive and reactionary interventions, and we want to make sure we prevent them. And by doing that, you know, by having the pain medications straightened out before the weekend, having a crisis plan, a man with prostate cancer who's having urinary difficulty, we do not want them to have a catheter placed, especially on the weekend. So we give them strategies on how to, you know, hydrate, you know, maybe take some cranberry pills or some pain medications, how we can have them sit in the bathtub if they're having trouble urinating, all different things of strategies on how to manage them over the weekends to prevent the catheter from going in. People with brain metastasis or brain tumors, when we're putting them on a steroid taper, you know, we don't want them dying over the weekend having a herniation if they're having trouble tolerating their steroids being reduced. We want to know if they have headaches, nausea, vomiting, and have them know that we give them permission, we empower them to increase, to put their steroid doses back on a higher level without even having to come to the ED, without having to have any of this done. And the other thing is we should have access to our electronic medical records over the weekends. So if a patient does call, we know exactly what's going on. So if it's a Dr. Gonzalez patient that I don't happen to know very well, I can go to my computer and see exactly what's going on with this patient. They also, in some of the big centers, they actually have 24-hour cancer care, urgent cares just for cancer patients for that practice. Hospice does that all the time. They can have a nurse to your house in 2 hours, but wouldn't it be nice to see non-hospice patients have that same service? And of course, our amazing navigators, we've met two of them 2 weeks ago, Sarah and Jane, yes, you know, who also they have to lean on in order to get through their weekends and to be proactive and not be reactionary. And that's the way we can assist. So getting back to, again, going full circle, let's review caregivers. Mm-hmm. Supporting caregivers is of the utmost importance in establishing kindness in the management of our cancer patients. We ignore our cancer caregivers. We disrespect them. We don't make them feel part of the team. We make them lack confidence. We make them have loss of self-esteem. They're lost. They don't know how they can help. They almost feel like they're intruding rather than being a very integral and important part of that dyad. We can help them by, number one, recognizing the importance that they bring to the table. And the way we can do that even better is by using our four tools from Len. There's the assessment of the caregiver. There's the education of the caregiver. There is the the empowerment of the caregiver, and there's the assistance of the caregiver. And by doing all of these things, again, it's not about the caregiver per se, it's about the caregiver taking care of the patient, also taking care of themselves by being given these tools to allow a better outcome for our cancer survivors. Angel Santana, your thoughts?
You know, I think that this module, this as a whole, has come a complete full circle. As a person from being the patient, I've said it many times, you know, there's not much that out there right now for the patient. I think that what we are learning from our podcast, from every episode, particularly today's, is the importance of what two people really should bring to the table. And it's like any sports, it's a team effort, but it starts with the patient, and it's all about patient, you know, the ability to know who your patient is as a caregiver, right? And also as a patient to know who your doctor is. And when you put those two units, components together, you can tackle on anything. And hopefully people have a better understanding about that and also have a little bit more respect for, you know, the system, even if it is broken, because sometimes you need to see both sides of the racket, or if you want to look at it, the court side. It's not always one-sided. You have to go full circle, and you got to go full court press to identify, you know, the do's and don'ts.
Awesome. Thank you for those beautiful insights. Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. How is your son?
He's good. He is sleeping a little bit better. I'm still sleep deprived, but you know, hey, that's the beauty of being a team effort. My wife and I, we try to tackle it on. Unfortunately, we both wake up. So
No, understood. But anyway, thank you, everybody. If you want to give a listen to some amazing spiritual uplifting dialogue and discourse and prayer and funny stories and just the greatness of my co-host, please Have Faith, Let It Begin. Rod Friedman, Rod, one of the greatest men of all time, already helping Angel in so many different ways, helping Croc survivors, helping cancer survivors. Our website will be up shortly. Small Biz Up, please give them a look at. Michael John Benzea, Charlotte Larson, thank you for your support. Our board of directors will be seeing you guys in April, getting everything ready for that, for our quarterly meeting. Have a couple of surprises for you guys. Thank you for keeping us honest, keeping us focused, keeping us providing our survivors with a great product in this podcast, and hopefully getting better every week. To our survivors who we love, adore, would break down cement walls for you guys. There's not enough we can say to help you in your struggles and in your journey. Angel and I tell you all the time, please contact us if you need anything, advice, resources. We have books to give you. We have advice to give. Please listen to the podcast, go back to the old archives, check out a few different modules that interest you, that pertain to you. We're really starting to build up our library. We close each session, each podcast the same way, with a blessing to you. On behalf of Angel and Rod and all the board of directors, we wish you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. God protect you. Peace. See you next week.